Today on Maine Calling, when and how to leave a dangerous relationship. Why do people stay in abusive relationships? Often it's because the fear of leaving is greater than the fear of staying. Other times people convince themselves that the threat is not as serious as it really is. But victims don't have to figure it out alone. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, a conversation about domestic violence. We'll talk with the executive director of the Maine Coalition to End Domestic Violence. She's been doing this work for 40 years. We'll hear from a woman who managed to get out and protect herself and her children. And we'll learn about the Liberation Fund and a new campaign to help survivors with basic financial needs. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It's estimated that more than 14,000 Mainers experience domestic abuse every year. Today, we will learn about places to turn if you or someone you know experiences abuse. We'll also learn about a new fund to help people in need of funds for short-term issues. Joining us today, Francine Garland Stark with the Maine Coalition to End Domestic Violence. She's executive director. Hannah Senecal, who is a survivor from Aroostook County who received help from the Liberation Fund, which we'll talk about today. Moran Behrens, who is co-founder and CEO of Words from the Woods, the creative agency that helped create the safety campaign. We invite you to join the conversation. Is there someone in your life you are concerned about? Are you thinking about trying to leave a relationship? Do you want to learn more about the Liberation Fund? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And for those who may need help right now, the number to call for help is 1-866-834-HELP. 1-866-834-HELP. And since I'm giving out so many numbers, I will give the Maine Calling phone number again. It is 1-800-399-3566. Hello to all of you, and thank you so much for joining us. Francine, I've been thinking about this, and you know, I think there's no such thing as a perfect relationship, perfect marriage. And I'm wondering what your advice is to people about when you know that this is not something that's sustainable, that you may be in danger, that you need to think about finding a way to make a change.
Good morning, Jennifer, and thanks so much for having us all on today. It's such a good question because I think that, as you said, no relationship is perfect, but most of us tend to have a gut that we don't always listen to. And one of the things that people who are experiencing abuse do is tend to play down the fact that they feel afraid, that they feel as if they can't really say the things that they want to say to their partner. They can't do the things they want to do every day. And I think that sometimes people feel like, oh, I'm overreacting, that I should, do or say the things that my partner keeps telling me. If I did or said them, things would be better, but they don't get better. And so you've tried all the things and things are not getting better. And fundamentally, you're feeling afraid of doing something. And so, I mean, I just feel like if I could give a magic answer to somebody, I'd say, give yourself permission to believe what you feel and to believe what your gut is telling you, and reach out to somebody to talk about what's going on and help you figure out what your next steps might be.
Yeah, and I know that one of the things that you have said on this program before, And I'm sure you believe is one of the most important messages today is that if you decide it's time to leave, you need to make a plan.
For sure. I mean, I think people always focus on leaving as if leaving's going to solve the problem. And I think that is both true and not true at the same time, because leaving is both how you get to have some space for physical and emotional healing and maybe financial repair and all the things you need to be able to live free from this abuse. And at the same time, leaving is the most dangerous thing you can do, because leaving is dangerous. The person who is abusing you in order to have control over your life. And when they realize that you are leaving them, whatever they've done previously to be abusive and to maintain control over you is probably going to get worse, at least in the short term. And so having a plan for how to figure out this leaving process in a way that's going to be as safe as possible is really important.
And
And so
this is
that's
where you all can
advocates.
help, right?
Exactly. That's what advocates at the Domestic Violence Resource Centers are really experts in, is talking about creating a safety plan. What are the things that you can anticipate will likely happen? Because you're an expert in how this abusive person thinks, what they do, and what they do when they get upset, when they find out they're not going to get their way. And so how can you make a plan around that? And so we can help with a variety of things that may be important in helping you strategize to make those changes in as safe a way as possible.
Hannah, something Francine just said really stuck out to me, where it said people play down that they feel afraid. They don't believe that what they feel in their gut. Did that happen to you? Did you sort of rationalize with yourself?
I did, and I also defended him. So every time he did something to me, I made an excuse on why he was doing it, and hoping that it would change. But it didn't. And me rationalizing his behavior actually made it worse.
In
Made
your
his behavior
case,
worse.
how did you make that decision? How did you make that decision to leave this
So
violent
I didn't
relationship?
have a choice. I didn't have a choice. I had a choice on either keeping my kids or leaving my relationship. And my choice was my kids. So it was a very hard decision because, when you love someone so much and they become a huge part of your life, that it's hard. And to make a decision that big for myself, not just myself, but my children as well, is a big impact. And if it wasn't for them, I don't think I would have the strength to have left.
I can hear the emotion in your voice. It's still hard for you, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And how long ago was that?
He left back in December, so it's been almost 9 months.
Do you feel safe now?
I do.
All right. Well, one of the reasons you're on this program today is because the fun that we're about to talk to helped you, and I'll come back to you for that. But I want to turn to you, Moran, which is tell us about the Liberation Fund and how your agency got involved in it.
Absolutely. Words from the Woods was introduced to the Maine Coalition to End Domestic Violence through a client of ours who introduced us to the family responsible for setting up the Liberation Fund. And they wanted to figure out a way to reach more people with the prevalence of the issue of DV and drive donations to the Liberation Fund. And that was really the connection to us. What struck us about both the coalition and the Liberation Fund was what the coalition is doing is critical to raise awareness of organizations that are doing significant work in our state, from training to survivorship to advocacy and public policy. And then it sort of narrowed in, the Liberation Fund was directly helping survivors. And that, I think, was an aha moment for us, that there was a place to turn to if you needed something seemingly small that can make a huge difference in terms of survival. I say seemingly because they're very critical in someone's life and in their plan, to Francine's point, but directly funding safety on an individual level was a really powerful idea.
Well, let me ask you, Hannah, this new fund, the Liberation Fund, which is helping people who leave these relationships with short-term expenses, how did it help you?
So this all happened around Christmas time, and I had a fuel bill. It was dead of winter. I didn't have any fuel in my home, so they ended up helping with fuel. They also paid an extraordinary amount towards my light bill because my light bill was over $1,000. So they ended up helping with my lights and my fuel, which helped me be able to afford my kids' Christmas gifts. Actually know that it was okay to leave and that I wasn't stuck in that relationship just because of finances. And they helped me tremendously.
So it sounds like a few hundred dollars for you made all the difference in the world.
It did. It actually made my kids' Christmas, so it helped a lot.
Francine, talk about this. This is really sort of something that's not talked about a lot, is the financial toll of leaving a violent relationship, an abusive relationship. What are some of the other ways in which the financial toll is can be a really big impediment and people may not realize?
Well, I mean, I think how much everything costs is front of mind for most people right now, certainly in the state of Maine. And I think, in order to secure a new place to live right now, you need thousands of dollars, not hundreds of dollars. You need thousands of dollars. And if you're looking to have a place where you can be safe with your child or children, you need to be able to not only secure sometimes a new place to live, or in order to retain the place you have, what are the expenses that you have to take on? Often abusers will say that they've taken care of bills, but they may not actually have been paying the rent for the last few months. And so all of a sudden you find yourself with an eviction notice. They may say that they've been paying the car payments or paying for the utilities, but in fact they haven't. And so you end up with your credit impacted. You're sitting there on a pile of debt in order to try to survive, and you can't just find that money somewhere. And so sometimes what I always wanted when the donors reached out to me to establish the Liberation Fund, it was really at the beginning of the pandemic. And they reached out because they said, "Oh my gosh, people are trapped at home right now. What could we do to help?" And I said, "I have always wanted something, a fund that I could just say, yes, we can pay for that. If that's the thing standing between you and safety, we can pay for that." And they said, "That sounds great." And so that's how we started the fund. And so just like Hannah was saying, sometimes people are like, I can stay here. I have a protection from abuse order. And so my abuser is not going to be in the house. But I can't heat the house and I can't turn on the lights." And we can say, "How much is that?" and write the check. And that has made such a difference now to really nearly 2,000 people in the state of Maine since we established the fund.
Wow, how long has the fund been in effect?
Since the summer of 2020, we started it all right at the height of the pandemic. And we were able to do things like replace the tires that an abuser slashed after the survivor had left. We were able to get security cameras so that people who were saying, "I know my abuser is stalking me. They're around my house. They show up where they shouldn't show up." And we were able to buy security cameras. We were able to pay for a lot of security deposits for people securing new housing. It's been amazing. Really, these things, and it's like between $500 and $3,000 per person. The highest end is when we've actually paid for someone's legal fees in order to be able to actually get something to happen in court that was critical for their ongoing security and safety.
Moran, what is the goal of the public service campaign? What are you hoping that people know that they didn't know already?
The first answer to that, I think, is visibility. It's about awareness of domestic violence, but shed in a new light where we're talking about the financial side of domestic violence, which statistics show the unrecognition of the financial side as a form of control. So visibility first and foremost, inserting it more into the dialogue. And on a tactical level, we really want to increase audience engagement and drive donations to the Liberation Fund. This is really about smaller donations from individuals. A Mainer helping a Mainer is how we're looking at framing this. Of course, the big donations are nice, but really for this specific effort, it's about smaller donations that really make a meaningful difference in a survivor's story.
Francine, is there a program like this in other states? Is there something that you have seen for a long time and seen the difference it makes? Or is this just something, but from the 40 years of work you've done, you knew what a difference it would make?
All across the country, organizations have been trying to meet these needs. Even back in my early days in the work in the 80s and the 90s, when I was working out of Bangor, we as a staff would just contribute money to a small fund because every now and again you had to. And churches used to help more than they're able to now. There's always been a recognition that there are financial needs that people have, but there's never been the level of coordinated attention to trying to really meet that need in real time without suggesting to people, oh, these are the four places you could call. Instead, being able to just say, oh, that makes a lot of sense. We can help you with that. Instead of having people have to somehow search everywhere to meet that kind of need.
All right. Well, we are talking about domestic violence. We're talking about figuring out when and how to leave an abusive relationship. Do you have questions? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You could also send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're learning about a new initiative to help survivors of domestic abuse. With me to talk about this, Francine Garland Stark of the Maine Coalition to End Domestic Violence. She's executive director. Also with me, Hannah Senecal, who is a survivor in Aroostook County who received help. Moran Behrens is also with us. She is co-founder and CEO of Words from the Woods, the creative agency that helped create and fund the safety campaign. And for those who may need help right now, the number to call for help, 1-866-834-HELP. Join our conversation. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I'll go to an email here from Chris. Are there warning signs that people either overlook or seem obvious to all but those being abused? And I'll go back to you, Francine.
Sure. I think that people, the first thing that people experience and don't notice is how isolated they can become. That not being able to continue to interact with friends and family without first having to check and sort of get permission from your partner, and that permission is never coming. And the use of jealousy, so often early in a relationship, sometimes people will think that their partner expressing jealousy is somehow a demonstration of how much they care. But in fact, jealousy is a tool to keep you from interacting with other people. And can become an incredibly dangerous component where you're afraid to even talk to any other person because your partner might think that somehow that's a threat to your relationship. I think that isolation is this sort of cornerstone on which everything else is built because it gets in the way of you being able to talk to other people to have other perspectives on what's happening in your life. And I think also there's this sort of these ideas about relationships where every relationship is hard work. There's give and take. You have to work through hard times. You need to forgive. You need to compromise. The problem is in a relationship where there's abuse, the only person doing the compromising and the giving and the overlooking and the working is the person who's being abused. And it's really shrinking your life to a place where you really can only do the things that your partner says you can do. You can only access the money that your partner allows you to access, even if you're the one making all the money. It be can become such an incredibly hard trap to see your way out of. And then when you start to, they say, you made all these choices. You're where you decided to be. And so it can be incredibly hard for a person to give themselves permission to say, you know what, maybe I made some mistakes, but that doesn't mean I need to live like this.
We'll go to Carla, who's calling from Presque Isle. Hi, Carl. Carla, go ahead.
Hello, how are you guys today?
Good. Go ahead.
Actually, I'm not from Presque Isle, but that's okay. I'm actually in York County, so I am a domestic violence survivor. Sorry, it is kind of an emotional subject,
I'm
but
sure.
what do you do? I mean, I'm 60 now. My domestic violence, however you want to put it, partner was my husband, and he died 3 weeks ago. And even though I had gotten away, it's hard. You know, they still came back, and we had a child together. So unfortunately, I have cancer, I just found out, and I have to have surgery. And I can't get any help. I've been on a housing list for 12 years. I'm sleeping in my car with my service animal. And money does come down to it even at my age. So I've called and I can't get help because unfortunately I'm a pre-senior citizen and I now find myself in the same boat with a family member who has a lot of separate issues. So how does somebody in my age group get help?
Carla, thank you for your call, and I'm so sorry to hear about everything that has happened to you and now your cancer diagnosis. Francine, what is your guidance for Carla?
I'm just so sorry for all the things that Carla's going through. And I do think that Caring Unlimited is the Domestic Violence Resource Center in York County, and that would be a good place to call. And you can call the statewide helpline and just they'll direct you to Caring Unlimited for a conversation. I think that what Carla's describing, though, really speaks to the larger framework in which all people are living, which is that right now in Maine, housing is an incredibly difficult thing to get. And if you're an older adult or a person with any kind of special needs because you are ill or have some chronic condition, you need emergency access. You need support right now, and it's incredibly hard to find. The shelter beds available for people who are survivors are very limited. We meet a very small percentage of the actual need for shelter. We help people in lots of ways, but we can't meet all of the needs. And part of that is because right now our healthcare system is struggling and broken. Our housing system is broken. Our transportation is hardly available, and real emergency services continue to crumble away. It's a big crisis. And there are people, unfortunately, like Carla, who are in an incredibly precarious place because there isn't an immediate solution for what it is that they need today.
Francine, a given, and Maine Calling's been doing a lot of reporting on the housing crisis. As the housing crisis has worsened, have you seen that affect the work that you do and the ways to help people who are who need to get out of an abusive relationship?
Well, absolutely. I mean, back in the 90s, we were able to sort of help someone come into shelter. The average length of stay was about 2 weeks, sometimes as much as a month, but they could pull together safety net related resources and get some help with a security deposit and first month's rent and be on their way. And now it is not at all uncommon for people to spend a whole year in shelter. And sometimes they'll even have a voucher that will subsidize their rent. But they can't find a place that passes inspection, that has the right number of bedrooms for their family, and that they can rent for the amount of money that the voucher is worth. or to get a, and has a landlord willing to take someone who has a subsidy. There's so many factors that can get in the way of a person actually accessing housing, even if they have a little bit of support. And so we've been fortunate, the Maine Coalition of Domestic Violence, to have a HUD grant for a rapid rehousing. We've been able to get assistance out statewide. Right now, we are paying rental assistance for almost 70 families across the state. But that funding is in jeopardy because the Department of Housing and Urban Development continues to try to do administrative changes that are actually against federal law. So the courts keep stopping it. And so the grants that need to be coming back to renew this rental assistance and keep these programs going and growing is being stopped because the administration wants to really minimize the number of people who can access this kind of critical help.
Carla, I wish you the best of luck. And again, Francine, you recommended she turn to Caring Unlimited, and she can call the number 1-866-834-HELP to try to find them. Carla, good luck to you. We're going to go to Shannon. Shannon, go ahead.
Hi. I'm retired now, but I used to be a nationally registered animal control officer. And there was the lady that was head of the animal control in the state of Maine for quite a while. Her name was Norma Worley, and she was a pioneer because what she did is she had it put through the legislation and everything so that a woman or a man, whoever's being, through the domestic abuse, can get their pets put on the restraining order and be protected. So what I was wondering is there some kind of a would we send like donations? Because it's in the state law, the Maine state law. But what if we wanted to donate so that people could feed their animals and take care of them in the situation of domestic, violence, whether it's horses, dogs, cats, bunnies, whatever, because animals are very, very important, as you know, to us, for therapy and because we love them, but.
Yeah, Shannon, thank you. Is Shannon concerned about pets, Francine?
One of the things that I've really appreciated is how much our shelters have really made themselves as pet friendly as possible. And so if people want to support the ability of the shelters to help take care of folks and their pets, they can make a donation to the domestic violence resource centers in their area in order to particularly support the costs of helping keep the place pet friendly. And we also, all the domestic violence resource centers have relationships with some of the animal rescues in the state to help take care of their big animals like horses. And so those are all things that the domestic violence resource centers are working on every day. And so a support for our work is a support for that as well.
Shannon, thank you for your very good question. At the beginning of the show, I read the statistic that it's estimated more than 14,000 people are in a violent relationship, an abusive relationship, which means that likely all of us know somebody. And I'm wondering what kind of guidance, and I'll turn to you first, Hannah. If someone in your life had been concerned about you, is there something that they could have done or said to help? What would you say to someone who's thinking about someone they love, or maybe just a coworker, or maybe a neighbor, and feels helpless and doesn't know what to do?
For me personally, I don't think anybody could have said anything to make me leave, because I was so stuck on, like, there was nothing wrong. So my situation is probably a little bit different because I wouldn't have left no matter what anybody said. I had a lot of people say, like, you're in an abusive relationship. He's abusing you. It's time for you to leave. And until I was ready, I couldn't make that decision. So anybody that's going through anything like this, there are several resources out there to help. I'm actually helping one of my best friends who's going through a domestic relationship right now. And I ended up moving her across the states to get her away from her abuse. And I just want everybody to know, like, there is people and resources out there to help. no matter if it's with housing or food or, just emotional support, because it's also an emotional roller coaster that you're going to be going through, not just because you're leaving the relationship, but because of all the abuse that you're actually going to realize that was abuse. And it's going to come flooding in. So you definitely need to have a counselor or a resource, someone to be there to talk to be able to express how you're feeling, because it's a lot. It's a lot of emotions that come out. And my kids too. I mean, my kids have gone through an emotional roller coaster. So definitely have a support system around you, whether it's family, a counselor, even MCEDV. I know the Hope and Justice Project helps a lot of women out there. Well, domestic survivors, not just women. So definitely reach out to any resources that are available.
Francine, then I'll turn the question to you. You're concerned about a coworker, a friend, a neighbor. What do you do?
I really appreciate what Hannah said around sort of every person. It's ultimately comes down to their decision and their analysis of what their circumstance is. And so you can't just sort of say to a person, this is what you need to do. I think that's the what you don't do. But what you do do is find a confidential environment, a private environment where you can say to a person, I've been watching you and it seems like you've been really upset. Seems like you're not coming to spend time with your friends. I feel like you're pulling away and I'm concerned about you. I just want you to know I'm here to talk. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but anytime you need somebody to talk to, you can talk to me. And it's important for people to also know that the helpline is there for the helpers. If you've got a friend or family member or somebody you're trying to help in your line of work and you just don't know what to do, you can call the helpline and say, this is what's going on. It's confidential and free. And we can have a conversation like, how can you create the possibility of a conversation? I mean, I know from my personal experience with my own sisters that sometimes folks take a long time to get to a place where they feel like they can break away. And all of us who are helpers need to know this may be for the long haul. And what the abuser wants is for you to give up. And so what you want to do is just stay in touch with this person that you're worried about and make opportunities for them to experience joy, to experience distance from this person who is abusing them. Create windows for them to feel what it's like to be living life outside of the control of this person who's abusing them. It may be just saying, can you and the kids come and go to the beach today? That's not saying, can you and the kids come live with me for a month? It's just giving somebody a place where they can have an hour of freedom from what's going on to feel better. And I think we have to appreciate that it takes a long time, and that's okay, and it's reasonable, and we can stay there for the long haul.
And Hannah, this resonates with you, what Francine is saying, correct?
Yeah, it took me 7 years to finally get the courage to leave this relationship. A lot of the abuse I didn't know was abuse. Like I've only lived in Aroostook County for since October of last year, and that was his way of controlling my life, taking me away from family and friends and the people that cared about me the most, isolating me up here into a place that I had nobody. And then he got me up here and we went through what we went through. And I'm up here by myself. I don't have family up here. I don't have anybody else up here. It was just him and my kids. So it definitely, what she's saying, it definitely hits home because I was trapped and I was stuck in this relationship that times I didn't even realize I was being abused. And then once I was able to pull away, it brought up all the abuse and and now I feel relieved. I feel great that I can come home and not have to worry about walking on eggshells or worried about, when's the next time he's going to snap at me or my kids, or when's the next time, I'm going to have, hands put on me. And it's just relieving. It's relieving to come home and know that there's peace in my home and I don't have to worry about any of that anymore.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, our email address talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about help for survivors of domestic abuse and where to turn for help. My guest, Hannah Senecal, who is a survivor from Aroostook County, and she received help from the Liberation Fund. Moran Behrens, who's co-founder and CEO of Words from the Woods, who is the creative agency that helped create the Fund Safety Campaign. And Francine Garland Stark, with the Maine Coalition to End Domestic Violence. She's executive director, and she's done this work for 40 years. Share your comments and questions. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Hear from Maggie. My experience in helping a woman leave a relationship, the abuse started when she wanted a divorce. Married too young, grew out of the relationship, and just wanted to start over. The abuse began then, horrific, physical and emotional. With help from my family and friends, she made it out, divorced, but her ex, after years, is laser-focused on revenge and hurting her through her children. He never showed this side before. How do you know? Guess there is no good time to leave when someone can turn nuts. Francine, is this an unusual or a far too common story?
It's a far too common story. I mean, I think that, but it brings up a lot of really important things for people to understand, which is that, you know, we are attracted to people because of the things we find attractive in them. We're not attracted to people because of the things that we later find out are their dark side, or the things that are hard to live with, or dangerous for us. And sometimes people, after you leave, are even worse and really bring on some of the most damaging behavior. Post-separation abuse is very real. And so our work at the Domestic Violence Resource Centers is to help people all along that continuum. Sometimes early in relationship, sometimes at least half of the people who call us have already separated from the person abusing them for exactly this reason. Once they left, the person who was determined to control their life forever can ramps up in order to try to make it so that you will never live safely or happily or believing that you're free regardless, because they, for some reason, believe they have the right to have control over your life forever.
We'll go to Edie calling from Blue Hill. Hi, Edie. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to share an organization that I learned about. It's in Bangor, Maine. It's called Mainstream Financing. And I heard a presentation by them at a women's business networking group that I belong to in Bangor called Tuesday Forum. And Danielle Hughes, who works at the Maine Savings Credit Union, helped bring that speaker to our group. And they provide incredible help. And they're just so kind. They want people to be able to get through a rough situation.
Wonderful. Mainstream Finance. Edie, do you know if that's just for the Bangor area?
I don't know for sure. I think it's for Maine. I'm not certain about that, though.
Okay. Thank you for that. We also have an email here from another organization working to help. Let's see, where's that email? From Mary, I'm the operations director at Finding Our Voices. We are a grassroots nonprofit that since 2021 has provided over $578,000 in financial assistance to Maine women survivors through our Get Out, Stay Out Fund. We also restore smiles to survivors and their children's dental needs through Finding Our Smiles program, which has helped 50 women and children with an estimated $350,000. We have numerous resources, including a support group, healing retreats, and educational programs. And the website that she gives, findingourvoices.net. We think it's important all Maine women in abusive relationships know we are here to assist. So thank you for that email. Let's see, we'll go to Ivy calling from Friendship. Hi, Ivy, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks so much for this subject. I wonder, is there a difference between the kinds of abuse that women experience and men experience? And also, what is sort of the percentage or breakout between victims of abuse between female and male? Thank you.
Francine.
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that is the most difficult around this question of that data is just the fact that most domestic abuse and violence is invisible. Jennifer cited earlier, we know that there are at least 14,000 people who are victims of domestic abuse and violence because we hear from that many on our helpline every year. And those are just the people we hear from. And so there are lots of people we don't hear from. About 7% of the people that reach out to our helpline for assistance identify as men. We help men in all the same ways that we do women, and all the same kinds of abusive tactics are available for people, regardless of gender, if that's what they choose to do. If they believe that they're in a relationship, they are the person who has the right to be in charge of the decisions and who gets to do what and who has access to whom, then that can be at play. And I have worked with a number of men who have been victims of coercive controlling behavior in particular, and economic abuse at the hands of their female partner. And it is awful and devastating as well. I think what we know, unfortunately, is that overwhelmingly the people who are victims of domestic abuse and violence are women. And in Maine, when we're looking at the rate of homicide, in domestic violence homicides, the victims of those homicides are almost all women. There are a few men who have been the victims of domestic violence homicide, but the overwhelming numbers are that this is a gendered problem, which is very disproportionately impacting women. And men are also sometimes the victim, and we help everyone, regardless of their gender.
Ivy, thank you for your question. We'll go to Kay calling from Lexington Township. Hi, Kay, go ahead.
Hi there. Something that I would like to also mention is oftentimes people are isolated from educational advancement. So if you don't have the education, the computer skills, the knowledge that you need to get a job to help you get yourself out of the situation, if at all possible, or help yourself after you're out of the situation. I would really like to put a plug here for adult literacy volunteers. If you're thinking about volunteering for anything, it's a wonderful cause. It helps people in so many ways. Even if you're not a teacher, I learn from people every day, and I am a teacher, was a teacher, but I learn from people. And so anybody can do this. Anybody can tutor someone and share some knowledge so that they can pull themselves up and out. And another thing is, you don't have to meet at their home. You can meet at a local library. You can meet in public places, and even 15 to 30 minutes makes a big difference if you could do it once a week.
Okay, thank you for your call, and thank you for the volunteer work that you do. Let's see, we'll go up to Gardner and Patrick. Hi, Patrick, go ahead.
Hi, Jen. How's it going today?
Good.
Hey, so I'm on the other side of things. I unfortunately have an alcohol addiction, and my wife left me 2 days ago, and I just want to let everybody know, like, there's a Jekyll and Hyde in certain things, and I love my wife very much, and she left an abusive relationship, and I'm guilty as charged. However, the love doesn't stop, and a lot of people go through some things that are just really tough, and it's not necessarily a us versus them or a one-sided thing. It's just how things go.
Francine, I saw you nodding.
I was appreciating the opportunity to talk about how we talk about things in generalities, but every circumstance is very specific. And I think that there are what we all agree on is that everyone has the right to be safe and to be treated with respect and have the opportunity to move forward with their life. And we often need help to get to the next step if we've done something that we regret and we wish we hadn't done. And so it's an opportunity to talk about Maine's certified domestic violence intervention programs, which we support through the coalition. They're 48-week programs that are for people who have committed domestic abuse and violence and want the opportunity to really engage with other people and thinking about what did I do? What was I thinking? What was I meaning to do? What was the impact of what I did? What can I think and do differently in the future? Because there's a real price to pay for continuing to act in this way and have these ideas about what it means to be in relationship. So I appreciate all the people who are like Patrick, who name that I did some stuff and it was wrong and I still care. But the path to change can be difficult, but we're trying also to build a bigger path for more people to be able to go through that journey. Not only do we want people to be able to get away from being abused, we want people to have a pathway to be able to improve the way they behave and the way they perceive relationships so that this doesn't happen. We'll never end domestic abuse and violence until we make it so that people who would be thinking that they could commit domestic abuse and violence no longer think that they can and have a pathway to stop.
One thing I'm thinking as we're talking, Francine, is how perhaps some of the stereotypes we might have about people in situations like this are probably not helpful, and possibly not helpful for someone who needs to get out of a relationship, who may say, "Look, my partner, my husband is not a monster. He just has a problem." And the reality still may be that that person still needs to leave that person.
I think that, popular media has really created this idea that people who are abusers in a domestic violence situation really are monstrous. And in fact, they're not mostly monstrous. They're people. They're just people like us. And many of us know ourselves that sometimes we are not our best self. And so part of the thing that is held against people who are victims of domestic violence who have not yet, as they say, left, is that how could you stay with this awful person? And part of why is because you love part of who this person is, and there's parts you don't. And so I think that all of that complexity leads us back to the reality that talking to an advocate at a domestic violence resource center provides you the opportunity to try to unpack what's going on, talk about your experience with somebody who actually understands and is going to listen to you and not give you a lot of advice, but really sort of partner with you in creating a plan for your emotional safety, even while you're with this person, so that you can continue to think about what's next. And then that way, it's not just about getting financial assistance from the Liberation Fund, which might be part of your story, but that is wrapped in this big strategy of safety for you now and moving into the future. And if you get the financial support through the Liberation Fund, it's going to be sort of the fuel that makes those next steps possible. And you might be somebody who is well off. You may have assets, but they're all tied up in the divorce. And so you can't access anything just yet, but you need something right now. There are so many ways in which this plays out. But I think, everyone I talk to wants something that they can do. This is a horrible problem and it just feels huge and unsurmountable. But I tell you, survivors are surmounting it every single day. And they are doing it with incredible courage and stamina. And sometimes they need a little money. And the Liberation Fund exists in order to help with that thing that is going to help make the difference. And it's wrapped up with our help with them in court, in shelter, in housing, with their kids, with child protection, and all the components that might be in place in their life to help them really be able to survive. And also, we try to bring this and appreciate Maine Calling having us here today because our goal is to end domestic abuse and violence, which we can do. We just have to really decide to take this seriously and do everything we can every day.
And Moran, how do we find out more about the Liberation Fund?
The MCEDV website has a donation tab to learn more about how the Liberation Fund helps directly impact survivorship
Patrick, thank you for your call. We just have a few seconds left. Hannah, what would you tell to somebody briefly who's listening today and maybe finds them where you were 8 years ago?
I just want people to know that no matter what, there's people out there to help you. So if you need to reach out and get the help, there's many people out there. And don't be afraid. Do what's best for you and try to get out of that relationship. I mean, it's hard, but you'll feel free.
Thank you. Okay. That was Hannah Senecal. She's a survivor who lives in Aroostook County who received help from the Liberation Fund. Also with us for the hour, Francine Garland-Stark, Executive Director of the Maine Coalition to End Domestic Violence, and Moran Behrens, co-founder and CEO of Words from the Woods, a creative ad agency. Today's sound engineer was Sandra Harris. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about Maine's lakes and ponds and the threats to their health. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.